This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. You're listening to The Checkup, our weekly series about how healthcare is changing in Maryland. All this week, WIPR's Mary Rose Madden on our news team is examining how the new health law, the Affordable Care Act, will affect coverage of mental health issues. This morning, she looked at the 2008 federal law requiring parity in coverage of physical disorders and mental health issues, including substance abuse. Right now, we're going to home in on that question, how treatment and coverage of drug and alcohol addiction is changing. 1 in 4 Americans will deal with an alcohol or substance abuse problem at some point in their lives, according to the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University. But the White House reports that in 2011, only 11% of those needing treatment got it. The Affordable Care Act states these addictions are chronic diseases and that treatment must be covered by insurance plans. That means many people who couldn't afford substance abuse treatment before may be covered come January 1st. Joining us now to speak about this is Carl Lejeune, director of the Center for Addictions, Personality, and Emotion Research at the University of Maryland College Park. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
What does this change in the law mean for people with substance abuse problems?
I think the primary way is that individuals who weren't really sure how to get treatment, weren't really sure how to deal with their addiction, and quite frankly felt a lot of stigma about their addiction, now we'll see some really substantial changes. Some of these changes will include greater screening opportunities for them to be able to talk about what some of these problems might be. Some of these will be in the quality of treatment that they will get, and also in terms of their ability to be more upfront and aware of what it means for them to have an addiction and kind of where their place in society is, instead of maybe necessarily feeling like they were more on the fringes.
I want to get into those in a little more detail. In particular, just at the most basic level, you're saying a lot more people will get treatment for substance abuse issues?
Yeah, certainly. And so at one level, this is because many individuals can't afford treatment. And I actually have noticed that when I have people in my field or, you know, people from other places ask me for a referral for someone to seek addiction treatment in this area, I'm embarrassed that I often am not as aware of places where they can go, places where they're able to get affordable care and places that have a real sense of what addiction treatment is at a state-of-the-art level and can actually provide it. And I think at one level what will happen here is that because of the better screening, more individuals may realize that they have these issues. Because of the affordable coverage, they'll be able to get that treatment. And I think that will then increase the availability of providers and individuals at a treatment level who will get the appropriate training to be able to handle this additional number of people who are able to receive that treatment. So I think there'll be some initial benefits, and there'll also be some long-term benefits for the field in general.
Here on Maryland Morning 88.1, I'm Sheila Cast talking with Carl Lejeune, director of the Center for Addictions, Personality, and Emotion Research at the University of Maryland in College Park. And we're talking about how the Affordable Care Act may affect treatment for drug and alcohol abuse. It is my impression that up to now, many insurers might cover some visits for substance abuse, but limit the number of visits. First of all, is that a generally accurate statement of how things have been working with private insurance up to now?
Well, I think that is the case. And before you mention the Mental Health Parity Act, and you know, an important thing about that was that the wording was very specific, and that was that the coverage, if you cover it, had to be the same as you cover other medical conditions. And where the important loophole here is if there was no coverage, it wasn't then being mandated. And so there was almost this kind of unusual thing where if it was happening already, then you might see some real benefits of that act. But if it wasn't happening, then there was really no benefit.
And so now it will be mandated that insurance covers substance abuse treatment.
Correct. And it also, because of that, I believe will have some positive impact on stigma, and I think it will add some positive pressure to providers, not just who do addiction work, but who are in more kind of general practice, or also who are seeing patients with other conditions. One thing that we often don't think about is that addiction isn't necessarily always just a condition unto itself. Sometimes it's a condition that can really complicate treatment for other conditions that we may have very good treatments for, but because of someone's addiction and the things that go along with it, they may be less able to adhere to their treatment. They may have other things that go wrong or other things that get in the way. And so I think at an important level, I think this is going to really broaden how we think about addiction and really increase our ability to reach people, not just people for whom this is an obvious situation and they're coming for that care, but also for people maybe who are either less aware or less willing to come forward.
I want to ask you about stigma, but before I forget, I do want to get your thoughts about how you think this is going to affect insurance rates, insurance premiums.
Well, so that's an interesting question. I mean, at one level, you could say if there are more people in the system, then it's going to cost more. But there's been for quite a time within the addiction circles and then also within behavioral economics and other areas that have really very clearly identified that addiction treatment is cost effective. And it's cost effective for society, but it's also, as I mentioned before, because of its impact on other conditions, it's also cost effective in terms of the quality of care that someone can get and the way in which you can prevent addiction from really kind of complicating treatment for other physical and mental health issues. And so I think it's very likely that, yes, you know, we want to acknowledge the positive of it is that there will be more people in the system, and some may be concerned about cost in that regard. But I think anyone who does this work is very aware that the benefits of this will have both long-term and short-term financial benefits that really are undeniable.
You mentioned earlier the stigma attached to substance abuse, drug abuse, I think also alcohol abuse. What impact is this kind of coverage going to have on the stigma?
Well, I think it will have a tremendous impact, both in the short term as individuals are able to get that treatment, as a society we acknowledge this to be an important illness, just as we do with other physical and mental health illnesses. And then also long term in that as we have more treatment providers, as we have better care, we're also going to have better outcomes. And I think when we think about stigma, part of it is a sense that for many individuals, it's really hard for them ever to get better. And as our treatment improves, and as we start to see that change, that's also going to have a big impact on stigma from external sources, but even how patients themselves think about themselves and the despair that they can often have when they start to feel like they don't know what to do next, they don't know where to get the right treatment, and where they start to lose hope.
This is The Checkup on Maryland Morning, WYPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Carl Lejeune, director of the Center for Addictions, Personality, and Emotion Research at the University of Maryland, College Park. And also joining us now is Bryce Hudak, clinical coordinator for the Recovery Network and Addiction Treatment Center in Baltimore. Welcome, Bryce.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What changes in the people that your network, the Recovery Network, can treat? What changes do you expect to see on January 1st, if
you
any?
You know, it's difficult to really say what the changes will be right now for a large population that we work with. We work with medical assistants, and for a lot of people that don't have health care, it will definitely create better access into treatment in Baltimore City for those in the below the poverty line and in the low-income bracket. right now the wait between when you apply for insurance and when you actually gain coverage for substance abuse services is typically about 6 to 8 weeks. So we hope to kind of cut down that wait period with Obamacare coming in January, where people will be able to kind of get streamlined into treatment and have a more readily available services.
And so do you think there will be more people treated, or just that things will flow more smoothly for those who are able to get treatment?
Well, I think it'll open up access to more people in terms of the amount of people that we can treat. However, I think one of the difficult things that we're going to see, and I can't say that this is for fact yet, is that anytime you offer up services to more people, you're going to have the insurance companies kind of taking back or becoming a little bit tighter on the amount of services that they provide in terms of the length of treatment. You know, right now with the MCOs that we have with medical assistance, you know, after a month or 2 months of care, they may try to cut down on the services and step them down into lower levels of care. And when you have more people trying to access services, I think that they may tighten up a little bit on the duration of services that they provide or reimburse.
And what kind of problems might that cause in your view?
Well, for us, I mean, it may, you know, let us treat more people, but in terms of the intensity or the effectiveness of the treatment, I think that would go down. If, for example, you know, somebody was able to get treatment for 3 months, you know, this year, once January rolls around, they may be only to be able to get treatment for, you know, 1 or 2 months, which, you know, for a 30-year history of heroin or alcohol dependence or cocaine dependence, you're not going to cure somebody or you're not going to have somebody fully recovered in such a short period of time.
Carl, I think you alluded to this earlier, and I'm interested in what both of you think. Are we, especially with the Affordable Care Act, but are we moving from a situation where drug dependency is seen as more of a social or psychological issue to seeing it as more of a physical medical issue?
You know, I want to be careful about how we really parse out the language here. I don't think this is moving back to a medical model where we're saying that addiction is necessarily a disease and you can never do anything about it and you have it your whole life. I think really the way we want to think about this is less about it just purely being something that's biological and to some people might consider, you know, a death sentence in terms of your addiction, and more saying we need to place the same societal value and the same societal resources to addiction as we do other physical health conditions where we've done an extremely good job of doing that in our society. So I think, although some may interpret it that way, I certainly interpret it not about where things come from or the kind of underlying causes. I think we have very good data to suggest that it is a combination of biology, environment, and psychosocial factors, but much more about giving it that level of parity.
But many people, I think, when they think of the psychosocial aspect, they think this is something that willpower could control. This is a matter of a sort of personal responsibility more than a matter of medical treatment.
That is certainly a perspective, but we have very good data to suggest that that's not the case. And I think that the individuals who are developing the best treatments right now are basing it from data showing that there are things that we can do to help someone within their environment, within the experiences that they've had, and essentially within who they are as a person, that can have a huge impact on the success of their treatment.
An insurer would never be expected to cut off a cancer patient's chemotherapy treatment or medicine for a person with HIV. But even though addiction is now considered a chronic disease, is there a point when an insurer can ethically say, we've paid enough?
Part of what's really important about this increased awareness and acknowledgement about addiction is an onus on the research community to do the type of empirically supported research to really determine what we need to effectively treat addiction. And I don't just mean the way we've traditionally done it in the laboratory and at universities with patients who have very limited symptom profiles, but really doing work in a collaborative manner in the community, in the places where real treatment is actually happening, and really try to determine as best we can with empirical science how long individuals need for treatment. And of course, it'll never be perfect, but I think if we can build a compelling case that treatment will be more effective if it's longer, that there will be financial benefits if it's longer, that's going to help. At the same time, the reality of it is easier for someone to look at someone with addiction and say that's enough, because there isn't some clear sense where you can say the disease is gone. And then it becomes a gray area, and in gray areas, there's a lot of room for interpretation, and individuals may have different perspectives based on what's in their best interest in that regard. Whereas with cancer or other physical illnesses, it's very clear when something is treated or not. And so at the same time that I want to really hit the importance of research to help us with that, I think it's a little Pollyanna-ish of me to assume that these other issues won't take precedent in some cases.
Bryce?
You know, when it comes to reimbursement of services or insurance companies authorizing treatment services, it's always a complicated situation, because insurance companies' expectations for recovery seem to be, in my opinion, unrealistic. Insurance companies will provide 1 to 2 months of authorizations for outpatient services and expect them to be able to step down and go to NA or AA meetings. Ethically, I think there is a point in time when, you know, insurance companies can say, you know, hey, we've provided enough services, we've given this individual a year of treatment, and they continue to relapse, they continue to, deviate from the norm. I mean, I think there is a point where we need to look at the motivation of the client and our expectations, and then compare that to their treatment plan. Different levels of care may or may not work for each individual, and you know, that's part of, you know, motivational interviewing and stages of change, is looking at what level works for this individual. Is this going to be an intensive outpatient, an outpatient, a residential, an inpatient, you know, a halfway house setting? There's so many different modalities of treatment, but when it comes to substance abuse, insurance companies only pay for a very limited variety of services. They don't provide all the different services that are needed to fully rehabilitate somebody. And looking at parity laws with mental health and substance abuse, again, you know, mental health covers a larger range of services than substance abuse doesn't. With, you know, parity laws being examined more closely and being brought to light in terms of the political realm, I think that is changing and on its way to kind of gaining more of an even ground. When you look at the levels of care, though, I mean, you know, you need to keep in consideration which one is going to be appropriate for the individual and which one they're succeeding in. After so many relapses, though, I mean, if a diabetic, their sugar levels go up, you don't kick them out of treatment. You don't stop paying for their treatment because they may have binged on eating a cupcake over the weekend or, you know, a sleeve of cookies. You work at their treatment plan and addressing all of that to the fullest. And I think with substance abuse, the stigma with it is a lot more negative than with other diseases or disorders in the medical profession. And I think that stigma is kind of where you look at insurance companies trying to cut off. They're not fully acknowledging the severity of addictions.
A lot to think about. I appreciate you both talking to us. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Carl Lejeune is director of the Center for Addictions, Personality, and Emotion Research at the University of Maryland, College Park. Bryce Hudak is clinical coordinator for Recovery Network and Addiction Treatment Center in Baltimore. We have more information at our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Mary Rose Madden's series on mental health coverage is at wypr.org. And we want to thank Beth Cavanaugh for engineering in College Park. I'm Sheila Cass. You've been listening to The Checkup on Maryland Morning. Stay with us on 88.1.